plans have been ended in the U.S. since 2000. Despite an improvement in pension funding over the past 3 years, a recent survey of companies with big pension plans shows nearly half plan to either terminate or significantly cut them unless there's more federal funding or higher long-term interest rates to ease their funding burdens. In 2005, the average return on pension assets was 11.3%, but the pension deficit of the biggest 100 plans was $96 billion.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. The Washington State Legislature passed a bill this week that will allow home daycare providers to collectively bargain for better wages and benefits. Sarah Gustavus has more from Seattle.
The bill is expected to be signed into law, which would make Washington the second state, after Illinois, to allow child care providers to unionize. The Service Employees International Union, Local 925, is currently representing these workers. SEIU President Kim Cook says the move to organize came directly from the child care providers 2 years ago.
They actually came to us and said that they were tired of being isolated and disrespected and felt like it was time to organize.
Home daycare providers can be family, friends, or neighbors who care for a few children, or licensed daycare providers who run small businesses in their homes. SEIU found that almost half of the children who receive state-subsidized child care are in family daycares. Currently in Washington State, home daycare workers who care for these children are not even paid minimum wage. Cook says it's time to protect home child care workers.
They're incredibly underpaid. These women make, primarily women, make anywhere from $2 an hour, which is what the state pays licensed exempt providers, to around $3 or $4 an hour for those who are licensed and have businesses.
Family child care appeals to many parents, especially those who need to work evening or night shifts. Debbie Knighton operates her daycare center 24 hours a day. The new bill would also mandate that home daycare workers have a say in the regulations that govern their work. About half of the children in Knighton's care are paid for by the state, and she was worried that regulations might force her out of business.
We've lost a third of our daycare providers in the state of Washington last year. I don't want to be one of those third providers next year because regulations are so expensive to keep up with.
Knighton also says losing stable daycare providers has a dramatic impact on the children in their care.
Children really thrive in security. They have to have routine, and having someone that they know and love that cares for them every single day pulled out from underneath them is, you know, like losing a parent.
SEIU President Kim Cook says new legislation is the first step toward gaining respect for child care providers.
Our bill actually doesn't really cost the state anything. It really just says that we get a seat at the table and that they have to sit down and bargain with us.
The bill passed 40-8 in the state Senate, but Cook says the organizing will continue.
Not until we win a contract will the economics and the state budget question come into play, and we're hoping that will be next year.
SEIU hopes the new legislation will build momentum to organize family daycare providers in other states. For Workers Independent News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. 3 days away. I don't think I've ever been away from the show this long and it not be, you know, a weekend or a holiday or something. Nerving. But I am back. Bob Kincaid, of course. And first things first, I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to my dear compadres, Bruce Birch and John Fox, who ably held down the fort, anchored the ship in a stormy sea. Yeah, pick an analogy. They did an excellent job over the last two nights, and it really did take a load off of my mind because, among other things, I despise doing reruns. Hey, it's time for the best of, you know, hooey. It's time for a rerun. So thank you for your patience in the rerun Monday night, and henceforward no more reruns. We're all set up in the mobile head-on studio here in, well, it's no longer the wilds of, deep in the heart of the sunny south, the heart of Dixie, if you will, or as they prefer to call it around hereabouts, the hit recording capital of the world, the Shoals area of Alabama. And, you know, I was excited about coming back to the air this evening, but I had an idea it was going to be a pretty good day because, you know, when you work from the side of the fence that I work on, when you get up in the morning and the first headline you see is, "Who meets President at White House?" you just know that the day is going to be rife, I tell you, with possibilities. Who meets President at White House? Abbott! Or, you know, you can go the Dr. Seuss route. W hears a who. The possibilities are endless. But, of course, this was nothing new for George Bush. He's been kowtowing to Chinese leaders for, 5 years and more now. If you recall, one of his first official acts as resident of the White House was to be put in the position of getting the knee pads on for the Chinese regime when the spy plane went down. Do you remember that? Of course you do. And he said, "Well, the Chinese, they want us to apologize, but I won't apologize, at least not more than twice. And if you say this apology wasn't enough, I'll go out and I'll apologize again. Do I need to get on my knees for this one?" So, you know, embarrassing himself in front of the Chinese has been, and it goes back to his daddy. Under Gerald Ford, if you read the relevant histories, there was what are we going to do with George H.W. Bush? He's such a loser. He's such a lout. He's such a toad. And so they wondered, okay, we'll give him the ambassadorship to Red China. And they did. And having done so, he parlayed that into a family business empire. I mean, look at what we've got now. We've got, his uncle, George H.W. Bush's uncle, George W. Bush's great uncle, is the president emeritus of the China-U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And then there's Neil. Everybody remembers Neil, you know, the ripoff from Silverado Savings and Loan, recently found to be in hoc by the millions to the ruling dictators of the United Arab Emirates. But before that, he was it was a multi-million dollar consulting fee, wasn't it? A multi-million dollar consulting fee from, who was it? Deng Xiaoping's son? One of those... Chinese strongman, you know, in journalism, Chinese strongman. God knows no one ever would ever accuse George Bush of being a strongman. But he got consulting fees for a computer firm, if you can imagine that. It's hard to comprehend. I know. So anyway, I get up this morning and I see who greets President at White House, and the first thing that goes through my mind is, I don't know. Third base! that we have reached a point in the United States of America where our erstwhile president, that thing that occupies the White House, we've reached a point in time where that individual is nothing more than a footnote to a comedy routine. And what does that say? What does that say? I can scarcely begin to imagine. It's pitiful. If he was not such a hateful, warmongering, deadly, murderous thug, you would almost be inclined to feel sorry for him. But no, no, there's no feeling sorry. It's just pathetic. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. Oh, there's more. There's so much more. Let's see. We'll get to it. But out in Kansas, one of the individuals who voted to attack evolution and let them teach things like, you know, gossipy water moccasins and cave women, she's offended by the flying spaghetti monster. And of course, you all know about the flying spaghetti monster. She's bent out of shape. There's that, and the right wing, the creeps, the cretins, the yuck of the American Family Association. I got to be careful how loud I talk. I'm, for all I know, I may be surrounded by members, and I do mean members of the American Family Association. I am, after all, in the Deep South. But this is a wonderful place. But of course, regardless of where you grew up. You know, I'm a West Virginian, pure and simple through and through. I've now spent as much time there as I spent here growing up. But if you've ever read, Thomas Wolfe's Look Homeward, Angel, you know that there's something special about coming back to the original ground of your youth. And the same thing applies here. It's so funny. I haven't been back here for 5 years. And yet some stuff is just ingrained. I've had the boy with me, and we've been toddling around, showing him the sights, and taking him to, favorite burger joints and things like that. And all, you never forget how to get from point A to point B. And you run into a few people here and there that you once knew, and now, hey, when did you grow up? Oh, at the same time I did. It's a marvelous experience. And I said the other night when I called in, there's a lot of Kurt Vonnegut flavor to it about coming unstuck in time. And you run across those people, and they look at your boy, and they say, we thought they broke the mold when they made you. Look, it's you again. And it's touching. It's very touching. And I love it down here. It was the attitudes of the people I grew up with that drove me nuts. But that's to be found in a lot of places. But oddly enough, I had a wonderful shirt that I brought with me that I was wearing the other day. It's a white golf shirt that I got from our good friends over at WD40.com. DUBYA, the letter D. 40 WD40.com, and it just has the George Bush election logo, the W and the American flag flying off of it, but underneath the American flag are two more letters, AR, and it just says war. And you get looks when you wear that kind of thing down here. But the funny thing is, not nearly as much as you would have a year or 2 years ago. Honest to Pete, I have, I talk to people when I wander around and so forth, and I have not heard, I haven't heard two good words for that hateful little jug-eared pig-eyed lout in the White House since I got down here. Even Alabama doesn't like that creepy little man anymore. And wasn't he down here today somewhere? He's gotten to the point where there are very, very few places in America he can go anymore where he is not routinely despised. But I did love it. What's that shirt mean? And I just said, well, you can't make war without W. It's about right. Wish we wasn't there. And the sad thing is, you're inclined to say, I wish we weren't too, but did you enable this? Did you help make this happen? Because down here, the answer is resoundingly yes. Now, when you realize you're screwed up, the question is, will you stop screwing up, or will you live the definition of insanity? To repeat the same act over and over again, expecting a different result. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break when we come back. Let's go to Kansas. We could do that. And among other things, your phone calls are always welcome. It's high tech, you know. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. And, of course, email works as well. bob@headonradio.com. We're all high tech. We're on the road. But no, nobody does it quite like us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
So what do you do with good old boys like me? When nothing makes a sound in the night like the wind does. But you ain't afraid if you're washed in the blood like I was.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORAKID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Okay, we may be experiencing a little technical difficulty, but we'll get Bob back on here in just a second. So he gave you the phone number. Let's see the lines light up and welcome him back. And tell us what you want to talk about tonight. You want to talk about medical issues? You want to talk about the war? You want to talk about what's going on at home? Doesn't matter where home is. Could be anywhere. But I will play you a little music and try to get Bob back on wherever he may be. Are you there, dear?
Yes, dear. I'm quite here. I've been here all along.
Thank you. It wasn't coming through.
Well,
you are now. That's
well,
all that matters.
I am now, and the whole world can listen to us have this discussion.
Okay.
I can hear you. Apparently, when your mic was off. Are you there? Is anyone there?
I'm here. I'm muted. Go right ahead. Take off.
What? No, I'm. Back up. this is. You know, you're going to have this. This is what happens when you do things on the fly. Gremlins? I don't know if it's gremlins or not. Are we live? Yes. Okay. What a trip. And let's. Okay. So, yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, we're both on. I got to get to the chat room at some point, by the way. I assume I'm live. I'll be there. Jump right in. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. If you've got, most everybody has Java on their machines by now. If you don't, you can download that at java.com/en, and you'll be just fine. Jump into the chat room and see what's going on there. It's a wonderful little community. Let's make the magic happen, Agnes. Let's see if the phone will go. Let's go to Ben, if you will. Hey, Ben, good to talk to you, brother.
Hey there, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I just finished reading a story that is linked to off DU, and I'm not sure the veracity of it. But if it's true, it's one of the biggest stories in modern times.
What's that?
And that is that the Federal Reserve has ordered the printing of $2 trillion in paper money.
$2
trillion? $2
trillion. Any idea when this came down?
I can just barely hear you, but no, I don't have any idea why or what they're doing with it. That's the story that it's here. It's off a, it is off a blog, and so I have some doubts about it. I'm trying to get some reporter friends of mine to run it down. But if that's true, I think that may have something to do with President Hu being here. You know, clearly we have to do something to pay them off. And if this is what we are planning to do, it is exactly what the Weimar Republic did to pay off reparations, and we all know how that ended.
Not well. It depends on what you mean by how it ended, of course. If it ended, how it ended for the Weimar Republic, 1932, 1933, the rise of Hitler. Or how it ended for Germany in general, 1945, the big collapse and bodies burning in bunkers and things like that. $2 trillion in fresh paper on the market. That's very odd to me, Ben, because it would seem like we would work more in terms of our debt in terms of our rather than our fiat currency.
It seems like a lot to me too. I'm going to sign out because I can't really hear a word you're saying. So if you can pot up the gain for the next caller, that would probably be a good idea. I'll sign
out
now.
Okay, thanks, Ben. And Agnes, let's go ahead and see if we can get this working. It would appear that we need more gain on me. I'm trying to crank me up some from this end and get a little bit more juice going. Any much more than that, and I'll go deaf. Let's go to Andrew on line two. Hey, Andrew, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Trying to shake off the gremlins there, huh?
I'm up to my neck in them. They're killing me.
I'm sure you'll do just fine. So I just wanted to call up and talk about Bush's poll numbers and whatnot, 33%. And kind of high. They say, like, you know, well, I saw somewhere he was talking about 11% of demos agreed, you know, approved of them. I was like, well, that only leaves 22 cents over bugs.
Well, my 33%, it's still that high?
Yeah, it's still that high. But they said that number includes, like, 11% demos, so, from what I heard.
Oh, that's it. Well, you know, I'm not, okay, 11%, maybe... If you think back to the 2004 primary cycle, if he had stayed in the race, maybe Joe Lieberman would have gotten 11% of the Democratic vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that number interesting, Andrew, simply because, among other things, I saw a story today. Joe Lieberman has been is now officially the first Democrat to come out and say he's all for bombing Iran.
He's all in favor of creating total chaos, but these guys don't have any sense. As far as Iran goes, and you know the 700 ton bomb and all this that they're going to detonate, what, 75 feet below surface? That deep, huh? And it's all just calculations. That's all. But I don't know. The same part of me would say these guys aren't that crazy to do that, you know, to go and bomb Iran in any way. I mean, not in a position. You have retired generals coming out, and I don't know, but when you get a rat in a corner, you know, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's going to be vilified once he's out of office, even if the demos take over the Congress and the Senate, and they, you know, I mean, take over the House of Representatives and the Senate, you know. Hopefully impeachment trials, and he knows that's what might happen.
Well, so, I think he's been told that there's a possibility of that, Andrew.
Yeah.
The thing that disturbs me most is the question of whether or not the Democratic Party has the will to pull it off. So what's really important as we go toward these November 2006 elections is that we keep the pressure up on members of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, have to.
And tell them that we expect... Yeah, that we expect the constitutional principles to be really lived up to.
Exactly.
You know, high crimes and misdemeanors does not mean blue dresses. It does, however, mean starting wars on lies,
mm-hmm.
bankrupting this nation for false and fraudulent
yep.
purposes. Absolutely.
Yes, yes. And, I mean, you got to keep a close eye on them because, you know, it's crunch time now, and I wouldn't put anything past them. You gotta keep an eye on them because it may not be bombing Iran. They might try and declare martial law or something. So,
right.
You know, they can do it in a number of ways, you know, to save his hide. I think he feels like he's got like, what, 5 months? No, he's got more than that, 7 months?
Well, yeah, and that's what keeps frightening me just a little bit about this whole process is the fact that I understand how these guys work, and we vacillate back and forth between, is this guy an idiot, or are these guys idiots, or what I like to call common street thugs,
mm-hmm.
or are they evil geniuses?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if they're common street thugs, we know that they're going to act the same way they acted before because they're not smart enough to come up with a new script.
Exactly. Or to turn the course. Change the course. They stay the course regardless, even if it's their own demise. So, like everybody talks about 2008 and 2006 midterms, hey, it's crunch time right now because they're not thinking about 2008.
Right, and the thing is, what was the line? What was the line they came up with, Andrew, back before the Iraq War? They said that they planned the vote in the Congress on the authorizing resolution in October because what was the phrase? You never roll out a new product in August.
You don't. And
they're going to, if they stick to predictable trends, they will roll this war out sometime long about October.
Yeah.
They'll start the bombing.
Yeah.
And Joe Lieberman has signaled that he is ready to try to rally the so-called conservative Democrats
Yeah.
to get them to do what they did before with Iraq and say, well, gosh, George, let's go kill some more people.
And then get the country all afraid and in a tizzy, and they say, well, we can't change leadership now. We can't have the chance of them getting impeached or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But and that would never happen anyway because the Democrats would probably start siding with the Republicans on support.
Well, exactly. And remember,
it's going to be a hot summer.
It's going to be a very long, hot summer. And a mean-spirited one and an ugly one. And now is the time that we have to be speaking up about this, Andrew, because if we don't, we're not going to get an opportunity, because by the time they start standing up in Congress and saying,
mm-hmm.
I believe we have to support our president, it's going to be too late.
Yep. Way too late. So I just wanted to drop my little 2 cents.
Oh, it's always welcome.
Yes. So hope you have a good rest of the show, and hello to everybody on Head On.
All right. Thanks, all right. Andrew, and many, many, many thanks for your call. And, you know, we're going to get all this worked out, and everything will be real normal real soon, we hope.
Sure it will.
All right. Take care.
All righty. Take it easy.
Bye now. And let's see. Let's go to Richard calling from California. Hey, Richard, you're Head On.
Whoop. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Bob, it's Luke.
Oh, hey, Luke.
I'm sorry. I was waiting. I thought you were going to somebody else. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's great.
Oh, okay.
How are you?
Oh, fine. I was going to mention a couple things. One I mentioned to Agnes was that I'll wait till next week to talk to you about it, but you need to pick up this new issue of Vanity Fair because there is a story in it, this new one, the green one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a story in it called The Rape of Appalachia.
I've heard about that. My friends at Coal River Mountain Watch have made sure that they alerted me to it. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're aware of it. So I'm not going to talk about that today. I'll make sure we talk about it next time. No big deal.
Okay, great.
But I sent you the thing from Greg Palast about the thing about Jay Garner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were talking about all the generals. They were talking about Jay Garner and over at GregPalast.com, I think it is. He's got this thing where he was talking about it. It's called, what was it, Desert Rats Leave the Sinking Ship. And they were talking about when Garner got there, you know, he was one of them by-the-book people who said, you know, we're going to have elections in 90 days, and, you know, we're going to be in and out of here.
Yeah, I read that.
And, it said,
and they straightened him up in a hurry, didn't they?
Well, they said, he said essentially what happened was he got back and he had a call from Donald Rumsfeld said, don't unpack, you ain't staying.
Yeah.
And that's when they brought in, was it J. Paul Bremer?
Yeah, Jerry Bremer.
Yeah.
The guy who lost $9 billion on the sofa at the Coalition Provisional Authority.
No, like I say, when your major claim to fame is you've been working for Henry Kissinger, it's like, well, this is more of a reason for an indictment than anything else.
Yeah, it kind of strikes me that way, too.
I was reading over at Media Matters this thing. Have you seen this thing now that Savage, one of the head lunatics on the radio, he was calling for 100 million Muslim deaths?
Well, that's not. I mean, it's not surprising. He's a monster. He's something out of a test tube.
They have him on here on our local channel. It's like 6 PM. I'm like, I wouldn't put him on at midnight. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like you're exposing children to this guy. It's like God.
Well,
I really put Art Bell on at that time of day.
Yeah, he's particularly offensive because the things that he talks about, you know. I was once compared by being called a liberal version of Michael Savage, and that just made my skin crawl because this guy goes out and openly advocates for genocide.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's like say what they let him get away with now. It's like say if anybody on the left tried to do it, they'd have him fined up the wazoo. I mean, they'd be talking Howard Stern numbers, you know. We're going to fine you $2 million just for looking at a microphone.
Oh, sure.
So,
you know, but these guys are all cut out of the same cloth. Whether it's whether it's Michael Savage talking about committing genocide against the Muslim world, or whether it's the Glenn Beck calling Cindy Sheehan a prostitute, they all come from the same place, and it's a pretty sickening place. And the most telling part of it all, Luke, is the fact that it tells you where they cannot go. They can no longer talk about the virtues of George Bush because he has none.
Mm-hmm. It's like saying we can't talk about policy, you know, because we really lose when we talk about policy. It's like this thing, you know. It's like it's the thing with Scotty McClellan. All this, all we're doing is we're just you know shuffling the deck chairs. You know, let's put it. You know, let's dress this up as the ship is sinking. You know.
Well, sure, and you know Scotty needs to go home to Texas and spend more time with his family and Jeff Gannon.
Yeah, I'm still amazed that story never resonated with the mainstream. It's like, guys, you all went after the Monica thing 24/7. You had a male prostitute in the White House 160 times.
No, I know, but there's no fun in that. I don't know, maybe it's because of the namby-pamby attitudes towards sex. You know, most of the mainstream media may not be terribly taken with say the gay lifestyle, but you know, getting it on with that girl, you know, and she flashed her thong for God's sakes. You know, it proved titillating. To the press corps, and it was titillating the press corps because, among other things, and this is the other reason it didn't work. The Gannon story never got legs. The right wing megaphone out there, Luke, was working 24 hours a day, 8 days a week, as the Beatles used to sing, pushing Monica.
Well, I mean,
we didn't do that. I mean, you had people like Brad Friedman at Brad Blog. And Bart Kopp talking about it, and it was, there was coverage of it at WD40.com and, you know, a lot of other places. But, you know, by the time it gets to the high and mighty mainstream media, nah, they'll take a powder.
I know. Oh, one thing that I tell you what everybody ought to be doing, if you enjoy country music, is I think this week or next week the Dixie Chicks' new album comes out.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you want to go out and buy one, you know, support them. You know, because that's
absolutely, and I think we played that tune a couple of times that was released in advance about them. What is it? Not making nice.
Yeah.
Or don't feel like making nice.
It's amazing. You know, I mean, it's the double standard. You know, they were complaining about that, saying, "Well, they're being obstructive." It's like, well, gee, when Toby Keith goes out and makes one of his things, you all are just, "Oh, he's so great, so virtuous." It's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll take a pass on Toby Keith because. You know, anybody who thinks that you're going to somehow engage in some level of, first of all, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth retribution is way too Old Testament for me.
Like I said, that just worked for the grave diggers. But you know,
exactly.
It's just one of those things. It's like sometimes on this stuff when you're watching, it's like, right now, like I say, that's all they're talking about now is this thing with Scotty. It's like, it's like I say, you're just changing. What was it? I heard. I think Randy said today. Joe said last night on your show. Said we don't like the news, so let's change. Let's get rid of the guy telling you the news. It's like we're not going to change the news, but we're just going to change the guy telling you the news.
Well, have you caught any of these stories, Luke, about who they're considering putting in place of Scotty McClellan?
I'm just sitting here going, please put Tony Snow in, please.
Tony Snow.
It's like, let's just hand out guns in the press room while we're at it, too.
Well, I mean, he'd be all for that. He's, well, you know, I don't know if I can do that. I've been through a bout of cancer and our house burned down. Our family has a veto on this. I think he's waiting to see what the likelihood of him getting indicted for, for picking up Scotty's lies and moving them forward would be.
Well, that's one of those things. Like they said, said one thing it'll do is said a lot of people who don't know how they've been carrying the water for him will have to, they'll get a whole bunch of bio pieces on him, so they'll get to see how he's been carrying their water.
Well, exactly, I'm still not sure, but Scotty doesn't stand in line in place to get himself indicted somewhere along the way, because he came out and made deliberately false statements to the nation.
And we learned about that a while back. That what case was it where if you just come out and claim you're innocent, that's enough to put you away for conspiracy. At least get
well,
you
if you're if you're Martha Stewart, it is.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, all she had to do was say, I'm innocent, and they charged her for a crime for that. It's like, how dare you say you're innocent?
Oh, I know. Hey, Luke, awful good talking to you. I'm kind of down in your neck of the woods now.
Okay.
I mean, I'm another state south of you, but it's good being down in red state country and talking to people.
Oh, I'll send you something the next couple of days. Our local city council here. By golly, they passed a new charter about a dozen years ago, and our county commission, I think it is like up for vote this year. 12 mm-hmm. and 16 are found out that, oh, by the way, you all can't run. You're term limited. And they're fighting tooth and nail.
Well, we can't be term limited. That's for other people.
Yeah. It's like, we passed that charter. There was term limits in it? You're kidding. How dare you? All righty then, Bob. You have a good evening.
You have a good night, too, Luke. Take care. And let's keep rolling. We've only got a couple of minutes, but if we have to, we'll carry over through the break. Let's go to Richard, please. Hey, Richard, you're head on.
Hi.
Hey, I tried to come to you the first time.
What's that?
I tried to come to you a couple of minutes ago, but I think we pushed the wrong button.
Yeah. Well, I'm here.
And I'm glad to have you there.
Yeah. I want to say to you and yourn, see Kyle, quack, quack.
And a happy horse vessel day to you as well.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Scotty McClellan song.
Oh, well, you may or may not realize it, but our good friend John Fox wrote that song.
I know, and it's funny. I realized who he was talking about right away when I heard it. I've got you streaming right now. And I would like to give a plug to the program I'm using because it's free.
Oh, do please.
Okay. It's called Cool Player.
Uh-huh.
I'm running it on a Windows ME system. Probably will run even better on an XP machine. And anybody can get it by going to coolplayer.sourceforge.net.
Excellent.
And what's nice about it is that it is open source, it's public domain, it doesn't do anything nasty, it is not spyware.
And it doesn't try to put an AOL sales pitch on your desktop.
No. I'm very adverse to that. And also, I don't trust running Apple software on a PC because my experience with... what's that thing that they have that begins with a Q, QuickTime?
Yeah.
Is extremely invasive of the operating system. As a matter of fact, the only way I know to get QuickTime off of a PC is to wipe the whole hard drive.
Oh, goodness.
And reinstall everything. The same is true of Real Player. so people should know that there are free alternatives to both of these programs that will not harm your PC.
And well, there are other ones out there, too. One of the things that I find frustrating, Richard, is, for instance, if you try to go and get, when I do the news on the weekends for Fourth Estate and all things, I like to go and get sound bites from George Bush's weekly radio address because it's always high comedy.
Yeah.
Oh. And lo and behold, excuse me, the Bush White House is all locked up hand in glove with Real Player.
Yes, I know.
And that thing is just loaded with junk, and there is a real alternative out there.
That's what I'm using, and it's pretty good. It utilizes... I'm trying to remember the name of the actual player. It's from Hungary. The player is, and it's called Media Player Classic, and it's usually bundled with Real Alternative.
Media Player. That same bunch also makes an alternative for QuickTime.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah. But people really need to know how damaging it is to put these two programs on the machine. I track the installation of Real Player, and it actually made 5,000 changes to my operating system. More than
5,000 changes that you didn't necessarily want made.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's profound. It's extremely deep level alterations to the system. And I printed it out. I printed out all the changes, and my mind was flipping because it covered 46 pages of printout.
Holy moly.
Single spaced. And so, my rule of thumb is just never put that stuff on a PC. But actually, I was going to talk about something else.
Well, I tell you what, Richard, would you hold on for a second? We need to hit a break real quick.
Sure, I'll hold on.
And Agnes will just put you on hold there for a second. We'll come right back to you. And while we take I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, more of our conversation with Richard. And, of course, you're also welcome to chime right in as well. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email works as well. Bob@headonradio.com. I'm sitting here. It's an amazing little studio we've got going here, and it's going to enable us to do a lot of really neat stuff down the road. So I beg your indulgence as we figure out how all of this stuff works. I know. We should have had this done ahead of time, but things don't always work out that way. But do feel free to jump in. We'll be right back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Bruce Burton. If you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, about 8 minutes before the hour. And my first night back after a four-day hiatus, if you count the thunder screw-up of last Friday night, and it is so good to be back. And like I said, we're getting used to this new system. And generally, you won't hear people who do radio talking about the magic behind it. And I don't even like to do it that very much either. And I'm not doing this by way of making excuses, but merely as a means of letting you know that, well, it's my screw-up. So I and I alone am responsible for any errata. Let's go back to the phones. Richard is with us, calling in from California. Hey, Richard, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, that's fine. I just want to repeat the place where people can get this free player that they can listen to your stream on and participate. Should I do it?
Go right ahead.
Okay, it's www.coolplayer, that's COOLPLAYER, .sourceforge.net, and that's SourceForge.net. And just download it, and the installation is pretty painless, and it will run all four versions of your stream.
Oh really? It'll run the M3W and the PL or M3U or whatever and PLS as well.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah. So it'll just take it'll take over from Microsoft Windows and run. I think it'll run just about everything except video. So and it'll also run your MP3 archives. So it'll do everything.
Wow. Okay.
And it's I'm going to investigate another free player as well. So anyway,
it's interesting. I'm receiving communications from our Mac guru Ben, who maintains the stream itself. So he's pretty well deep into it. And one of the things he points out is that Microsoft worked hand in glove getting QuickTime onto Microsoft PCs. So most of those things that you're dealing with there might not be Apple-based so much as Microsoft-engineered.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I never thought of that.
Well, obviously Microsoft would have had to cooperate in bringing those things on board.
Yeah, you know, something that's really disturbed me is how universal Reels formats are for non-commercial broadcasting, you know, streaming over the web. I mean, it's the official format of the BBC.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and BBC abandoned North America. They stopped transmitting here and went over to the Internet. So what you're going to need is Real Player to get their streams. However, they have their own version of Real Player, and it may be, you know, relatively benign. I don't know. But
well, that's fascinating. We, you know, we learn more and more as we go down this road.
Oh yeah, I do too. I learn a lot by listening to your callers.
Well, among other people, you know, I say from time to time that our buddy, our dear friend Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk, and he really is. Frankly, as compared with anyone else out there, I would put his knowledge of this technology up against anyone else, bar none.
That's great. Where's he located?
Ben is in is near Chicago.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And
listen, I got another topic.
Sure, go ahead.
Briefly, which is biodiesel. I know you got a PSA on.
Yeah, I so very much wish that I could participate in that. I want a diesel automobile badly.
I have a little bit of apprehension about this because we do have a biodiesel fueling station right down the road from me, in Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine just went out and bought an old Mercedes diesel. I'll tell you what it is. We've had some press about it in this area. And where they're getting the oil, of course, is from fast food restaurants. So they go around and you know, pick that up. Not only fast food, you know, anybody with a griddle.
Yeah.
And it works great in the cars, but what I'm really worried about is, you know, is there enough of the griddle scrapings to go around? You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. But by the same token, if you think about and this is really part of the future, the real future involved. If you think about it, when you consider the way that we subsidize, for instance, the growing of tobacco.
Yes.
You know, you try to talk about cutting back on tobacco cultivation, and all the farmers say, "Well, we'd go broke."
Yeah, yeah.
But they wouldn't. Not if they were growing rapeseed oil. You know, we call it canola because it's some sort of an acronym for Canadian yada yada yada. It's rapeseed oil.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And that will burn in a diesel. Well, as the ads note. Professor Diesel originally designed it not for a petroleum-based product, but for a biological-based product. Henry Ford originally designed his cars to be biomass-fueled.
Really?
But gas was cheap and easy.
Hmm. Well, out my living room window, I see two things. I see the Golden Gate Bridge, and I see an oil refinery, a big one.
I like the first part of the view.
Yeah. Well, I can see, yeah, I'm up on a hill, so, you know, I look out there, and I'm very conscious of pollution. I'm also involved with healthcare in my county, and we've got a lot of asthma, and it's beginning to get traced to diesel particulates. So it's like I'm thinking, you know, I don't see all the connections yet. I'm hoping that biodiesel is clean.
It's cleaner from what I've read.
Yeah.
And, the joke on it is that, you know, when you're running biodiesel, you drive along and instead of that awful diesel fuel smell, your car smells like French fries.
Oh, I actually saw somebody who was using it just this last Saturday.
Hey, Richard, it's very good hearing from you, but Agnes is going to use the remote iron skillet. We're coming up against the top of the hour break,
okay.
And we have to hit it.
Okay. Good to talk with you.
And thanks for the tech information. I do appreciate it.
Oh, I hope everybody does really nicely with that. Okay.
All right.
See you.
Thanks, Richard.
Bye.
Bye now. All right, and we will be right back right after the news. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Here's today's economic report. According to the Labor Research Association, 583 pension plans have been ended in the U.S. since 2000. Despite an improvement in pension funding over the past 3 years, a recent survey of companies with big pension plans shows nearly half plan to either terminate or significantly cut them unless there's more federal funding or higher long-term interest rates to ease their funding burdens. In 2005, the average return on pension assets was 11.3%, but the pension deficit of the biggest 100 plans was $96 billion.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
With a Workers' Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. The Washington State Legislature passed a bill this week that will allow home daycare providers to collectively bargain for better wages and benefits. Sarah Gustavus has more from Seattle.
The bill is expected to be signed into law, which would make Washington the second state, after Illinois, to allow child care providers to unionize. The Service Employees International Union, Local 925, is currently representing these workers. SEIU President Kim Cook says the move to organize came directly from the child care providers 2 years ago.
They actually came to us and said that they were tired of being isolated and disrespected and felt like it was time to organize.
Home daycare providers can be family, friends, or neighbors who care for a few children, or licensed daycare providers who run small businesses in their homes. SEIU found that almost half of the children who receive state-subsidized child care are in family daycares. Currently in Washington State, home daycare workers who care for these children are not even paid minimum wage. Cook says it's time to protect home child care workers.
They're incredibly underpaid. These women make, primarily women, make anywhere from $2 an hour, which is what the state pays licensed exempt providers, to around $3 or $4 an hour for those who are licensed and have businesses.
Family child care appeals to many parents, especially those who need to work evening or night shifts. Debbie Knighton operates her daycare center 24 hours a day. The new bill would also mandate that home daycare workers have a say in the regulations that govern their work. About half of the children in Knighton's care are paid for by the state, and she was worried that regulations might force her out of business.
We've lost a third of our daycare providers in the state of Washington last year. I don't want to be one of those third providers next year because regulations are so expensive to keep up with.
Knighton also says losing stable daycare providers has a dramatic impact on the children in their care.
Children really thrive in security. They have to have routine, and having someone that they know and love that cares for them every single day pulled out from underneath them is, you know, like losing a parent.
SEIU President Kim Cook says new legislation is the first step toward gaining respect for child care providers.
Our bill actually doesn't really cost the state anything. It really just says that we get a seat at the table and that they have to sit down and bargain with us.
The bill passed 40-8 in the state Senate, but Cook says the organizing will continue.
Not until we win a contract will the economics and the state budget question come into play, and we're hoping that will be next year.
SEIU hopes the new legislation will build momentum to organize family daycare providers in other states. For Workers Independent News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Glad to have you with us on this inaugural remote edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Beautiful evening here. Hope it is where you are as well. Let's go back to the phones. This is conversation radio after all. Bob has called in from North Dakota. Been a while since I talked to you, Bob.
How are you doing, friend?
Hey, how are you?
Say, I talked to a young fellow over in Iraq today.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
While he was there?
He's in country. He is in Iraq.
Pardon my fascination, Bob, but how did you manage that?
Oh, through the internet. We can do a lot of things through the internet right now.
Oh, okay. I thought the Pentagon had most access to the soldiery there blocked.
They'd like to. They'd like to, but we have our ways. And I just wanted to impart something.
Please.
It's, now, I don't have this written in front of me as a script, okay? It's just from memory, okay? A little bit of, a jingle we used to say when we were in Vietnam. We are the unwanted, led by the unqualified, doing the unnecessary for the ungrateful. We have done so much with so little for so long that we are now absolutely qualified to do anything with nothing. And what he said to me was this. He said, and it hurt deep. What he said was that these guys call themselves a name, and the name is, excuse me, old Gunny's kind of choking there.
I understand.
Disposable heroes.
Oh,
and
that's...
The Marines call themselves Disposable Heroes 0311. The Army call themselves Disposable Heroes Bravo 11, which is a B-11, which is a designation for a grunt. Somebody that gets out and does, but they call themselves disposable. Just like we felt back then, they feel like they are just disposable, like a Pampers or a, what are those things these neocons wear? They call them, Depends. I think every time that rummy goes up to the podium, he's got a couple of Depends on because he knows that the press are going to ask him questions and he's going to pee his panties. And I'm sick to death of every American being so self-disposed or so self-centered that they cannot see the sacrifices of these young men and women in any other light than that they are disposable. They're just disposable. And that's how these young men and women are beginning to see themselves. So shame on you, America. Shame, shame, shame. You did.
Of course, Bob, to be fair, you and I, the folks who take time and to share their time and listen to this program and many others on the left or progressive liberal, whatever you want to call it, they don't feel that way.
I know that, Bob.
I'm asking
a question. We are responsible, every one of us. And if we're not doing something, anything, I don't care if it's just, I mean, taking pamphlets out, little pieces of paper, sticking my people's car bumpers that say, head on radio network, listen to Bob live, okay? Something silly like that, a little a thing like an email, not an email, what do you call that, you link to listen, learn, listen, and then spread the word. Keep spreading it. Don't stop because they take the stickers off their cars and throw them on the ground or crumple them up. That is a sign that you're winning, because if they take them and crumple them up and stomp them under their feet, you're winning, because you've got them so angry that they would destroy a book, they would destroy a newspaper, they destroy an article, they destroy anything that upsets them. And if you keep putting it in front of them, eventually, they might look at it and say, well, maybe I should look at this. So that's what I'm saying. Never, ever stop doing what you're doing. You guys are great. I miss you.
I appreciate that so much, Bob.
For the guys in Iraq right now, the girls in Iraq right now, let's do this. Every one of us, every progressive, every liberal, every person with a heart, every person that cares. I don't care if you call yourself conservative or liberal or progressive or Democrat or Republican. Remember, these are our children. These are our brothers. These are our sisters.
Yes.
These are people that someone, if you don't love them, someone does. Why are you taking them away from someone? You know?
Yeah, or why are we allowing that to be done?
Why are we allowing it? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I, you know, in talking a little bit earlier, when Andrew called in, he said it's going to be a long, hot summer, and it is. The war, the bombing in Iran, I'm convinced. Like I said, these guys only have one script, and they only know one way to do things. Because first and let's be straight about something, Bob. They don't give a tinker's damn about the United States. They don't give a tinker's damn about the flag. They hate the Constitution. Okay, what they care about is protecting their own power. They are loyal to their party above all things, and as a consequence of that, they know only one thing to do with political manipulation: use it for manipulative purposes, but B, above all, to use it to preserve their own power and, at this juncture, their own hides. And as a consequence of that, we know when the war is going to start. We know when the bombing of Iran will begin. It'll be run up and ginned up and dummied up and faked up and fudged up all summer long. We're hearing it every day now. When Joseph Lieberman comes out and says, I'd be on board with bombing Iran, you know, but he qualified that, Bob, by saying, I don't think we will stop their nuclear program, but we can slow it down. We know what's coming.
You know, I have to say this. I know Iranians. I served with Iranians. I actually have many Iranian friends. Okay? And you know, Bob, they're not thinking of people. They're thinking of policy, politics, and the other thing, that word that we hate so much, religion, and the other one, dogma, okay?
And believe.
And don't say that to me, because, you know, since Tinkerbell went poof, I don't believe anymore. You know, it's so silly. It really is. But this is the sad part about it. The saddest part is that we, you know, I'm stealing this from Brad Friedman. I think it's Brad Friedman from Brad's blog. He comes up and he says, be the media, okay?
Yeah.
Be the media. And, you know, when he said that, and I read it and listened to him on he's not on, I don't get him anymore, but I do follow his blog, And he said, be the media, be the media, be. And I thought, how can I be the media? I'm just one person. I'm sitting in somewhere in the middle of nowhere. I mean, they call this the Great American Outback where we live.
Right.
The Great American Outback, you know, North Dakota. So if you think about it for a moment, how can I be the media? Well, first thing, they did it back in 1770s, I believe. They called themselves pamphleteers, and
sure.
People would pass on these pamphlets from household to household, from friend to friend, from family to family, and give them to even strangers along the road. They would pass out little pieces of paper with the truth written on them, and people started to learn, and that's where our country is in trouble. We stopped teaching people to be responsible. And if you want to be responsible, just be the media. I love what Brad said. Be the media. So I started being the media. I started burning discs, putting them on park benches, dropping them off in public restrooms, putting them in Walmart. I love to go to Walmart. My favorite one to drop off there is that one, that Walmart movie. You know? I love to go to Walmart bathroom and leave that one about the high cost of low prices. I burn off discs and drop them off there when I go shopping. I don't have to go shopping there. I would rather not, but the idea is to take that video or that piece of what I do with Bob Kincaid. I drop him in places that he doesn't even know he's been dropped in and hope that somebody picks it up and listens to it. And then,
well, you know, what you're talking about, Bob, is something that Bruce and I and John have been talking about. If there are folks who want to do that kind of thing, that's the best promotion we can have for growing the Head On Radio Network.
Well, that's a good thing. But I'm saying it doesn't matter, the Head On Radio Network, if it grows to be as big as NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox. Okay, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That is just kind of like a pill, okay? It's a start. We start by doing it individually and within groups, then within families, then within that, you know, it just spreads like wildfire. And you can't put out a wildfire unless you've got a whole department out there doing it. If the nation is on fire, and I mean not the fire of burning a police cars in the street or attacking people and doing damage to anyone. I'm saying the fire of knowledge and truth, you know, when the truth is, it's just common knowledge. It's not this secret little thing that we have between ourselves within our little clique, but we spread it. We give it like, you know, just, what was that one guy said? I spread news like melted butter. Somebody said that. I said, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
You know, I spread news like melted butter. It just kind of pours everywhere, and it's hard to get it on the bread because it's all over the table. And
right.
You can't, you know, when it gels and cools off, you've got a solid table of butter. So the thing is, all people that care, I don't care what you call yourself, as long as you care enough to find a way to spread the message. And Bob, you're doing great. Agnes, I love you. I know you're listening, and I'm not saying bad words.
She's right there. Thanks,
but
Bob.
I love you guys. Have a good night. Do good, and just keep on keeping on. And I do like, I'm not going to say it. Anyway.
Take care, Bob. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. I'm glad you're back.
I'm thrilled to death to be back now once we get everything working. You know.
Good night, friend.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. And rolling on quickly, David from Nashville, Tennessee, calling in. Hey, David, you're head on.
Well, hello, Bob. What a great technological leap forward. Here you are one place, Agnes is another. And all the rest of us are somewhere else.
We're waiting to see how great the technological leap is.
Well, by golly, it sure looks like one to me. And you know, I'm going to let my dear friend and brother in arms, I'm going to let Bob in North Dakota set the whole world on fire. I've got a call about one man, one word, one in one bar. I'll give you the shorter version of this. Night before last, it worked out I had errands to run after work, so I stopped by for a beverage and an hors d'oeuvre, and there's four young men at the bar, and there's a couple of guys sitting next to me. And the four young men at the bar, it's very easy to hear what the situation is. They'd all gone to high school in the local burg, and one of them had just successfully left the U.S. Army. So these three guys had come to get him to celebrate the fact that he was home and he was in one piece. And the only thing he had to get over, they could see, was one of those white sidewall haircuts. So in the course of this, one of the fellows sitting next to me says, "So you were in the military?" And the guy says, "Yeah, sure was. Just got out." And he says, "I got out a year ago. I retired." And these four guys turn around when they hear a fairly young voice say, "Yep, I'm retired now." And the short version of this story is this well-dressed black man said, "Yep, I just turned 40. I've been at volunteer state, all being paid for by the Army for the past year. I got out about a year ago. I did 20 years, 1 month, and 7 days. And now I've retired." And there's more conversation, and there's back and forth, and one of the fellows said, "So you got out, you got a line on something?" He says, "I don't really know what I'm going to do." He says, "But it came to a point where my division, we specialized in construction and building things." He says, my unit was headed for a rock, and I swear I think the number was something like $40,000 in re-up bonus. This man was a three-up, two-down sergeant. He says, "I could have signed up for nearly $40,000 in re-up bonus, but I chose to get out." And he said, "It cost me money in pension, too." But he says, "I just felt like I wanted to be, I just didn't feel like I wanted to go to Iraq." And this one young man of the three that were picking up the ex-soldier, the guy with the, you know, all the other three guys were wearing clothes that had the "I paid too much for it" label. You know how those guys are. $50 haircuts, the whole nine yards, leased automobile. They were just so prototypical, stereotypical. And this young man blurts out, "Well, it's a good cause, but I can see why you would want to do something else." And this fella beside me said, "I don't mean to offend you, but no, it was no cause." Now, the three guys in the expensive clothes turn around. Obviously, to me, it was Hannity or all the rest of them listeners.
Yeah, sure.
And he says, "But now, well, there was," and this 40-year-old black man just waved his hand and said, "I'm sorry, there's no cause for that war." The only guy that kept quiet and then later said to his friend, you need to hear that, and you need to let that go," was the guy that had just gotten out of the Army.
He understood.
So a retired sergeant that never, he left Gallatin High School and joined the Army. Within 72 hours of graduating Gallatin High School in 1985, this man was in the Army. That was that. And he said, "No, don't mean to offend you, but there's no cause for that war, and I wouldn't be part of it." And then he just stared at them. And then finally they all turned around.
Well, thank God for him.
I stood up when they were gone so that it didn't turn into some sort of a Sally Rally session, and I shook his hand and told him I appreciated his point of view. And then right after that, we got to talk about Pac-Man, because he turned up on the news channel right after.
Oh, Pac-Man Jones. God love him.
But getting back to that.
University Mountaineers problem child.
Yeah, well, yeah, now he's got a few other problems. But seriously, there could not be a more middle America, well-grounded, straight up the middle. How more much of an American can you be than 20 years in the military? He enlisted in the Marines, transferred to the Army, and now then he's letting the service benefits that he has so richly deserved, he so richly deserves and has earned, buy him a two-year certificate in business administration and computer technology so that when he takes his construction skills out there to become a general contractor, he's got a leg up on guys that just know how to do the physical part of it.
Well, exactly. And you know, being down here where I am now, David, I got to admit, as I drove in here, I felt like I was, and this is some of what the so-called professional or mainstream media has done to us. I was sensitive to where I was. Not just the old home stomping grounds, but I was in bushland. I was in what I had been told was the heart of Bushmerica.
Precise.
You know what? I've been here since Sunday night, David. I have not seen the first Bush sticker. Not one.
Big surprise. Fox News lies.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you can talk to, you know, I did the obligatory things. Tuesday I went and got myself a haircut. And barbershop full of barbershop guys. You know what I mean?
Oh, believe me. I know
it's
back.
I jumped right out. Well, you know me. I jumped right out there and said, well, you know, these Republicans in Congress have got to go. And I, you know, I expected to get, you know, get at least a little, what are you, not American or something. I got a chorus of amen, brother. This is a nation, David, that is turning around. This is a nation that's had the lights turned on for it. And I think there's going to be a lot more folks like that 40-year-old gentleman who are speaking up from the military perspective. You know, look, you know, when the retired generals are saying it about Rummy, what are the boots on the ground saying about it?
They know better than anybody else, and it's those generals. And Murtha is the guy that has had the ear in a two-way sense. He has been the conduit back and forth between real, caring, informed, gifted military people in the Congress of the United States for 15 stinking years. He has been the back-and-forth conduit for that. So what he is hearing, he can have conversations with generals, retired and active, that I don't believe I'm aware of any other member of Congress that could have a more honest conversation than Murtha. So, yes, the retired ones are speaking up because they feel they have to, and no, the actives aren't, because the same thing will happen to them as has happened to others. Oh, you want more troops, and you said so publicly? You're not doing that job anymore, and anything else out of you, that fourth star will go away. And they don't want to do that. They don't want to see what they've worked and achieved thrown out by a man like Rumsfeld.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And the question remains whether these people will, like Andrew said earlier, you know, they resemble someone rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. As it turns out, this new goon that's going to be replacing, who stepped down the other day? I've got it. Well, anyway, the newest goon in the crowd is a member of the what's called the Brooks Brothers Riot.
What's that about?
Well, it turns out that. I got to find it here real quick. But what it boils down to is one of the new guys coming into the administration is, in fact, a member of that riot squad that went down to Florida.
Ah.
And demanded the recount be stopped. He's one of those thugs. There's nothing new here. There's no new thinking going on.
It's just another roach pulled out from under the sink.
That's about the size of it.
That's all it is. And there are hundreds of them under that sink. They wave some wand or spray them with some special chemical so they can tolerate the light, and then they roll them out there. But after a while, you know, they can't tolerate the light anymore, and like Scotty Pooh, they go back to wherever they came from.
Well, I think we really are going to see a sea change, David, because when you're where I am, I think you can agree that, and I haven't just sat here around the place and pretended that there wasn't. I've been happy to go out and drive around the old stomping grounds, and I've been watching.
So you mean you didn't, you know, on the truck you didn't have like a Stars and Bars magnetic you could like plunk onto the bumper just to make sure they knew you were one of them?
No, I'm not running camouflage or anything. But
good.
That bourgeois, if you will, is gone. It's gone, David. And maybe this was long been known as a little bastion of Democratic politics anyway. But maybe you'd see more of it if you went further south in Alabama. But here, there's none of it to be seen.
If you can stay in an Alabama barbershop, those Republican congressmen, and the hoot is, you betcha, brother, that's progress. That's serious encouragement. You know, that's enough to make us to pull a quote from that guy from Minnesota. That's to make us get up and do what needs to be done.
That's the truth. All right, David, we've got to take our bottom break.
Course you do. It's past time, but thanks for letting me get on. And
thank you for the account. And you know, it's great. It's great to know that. You're doing some of what we talk about. You're not afraid to get out there and talk about what matters, to speak your mind and speak your piece, because when we do it, I think we find out that we've got a chance at changing things.
Well, that gentleman needed. The service veteran needed no help from me because he took care of what needed to be done. But once it could easily and quietly be done, that somebody would stick a hand out and say, I appreciate what you said, and here's why. It made for a nice new friend moment.
Absolutely. David, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a good evening. All right, let's take a quick break. Before I really, you know, just get on the list with Agnes. This is Head On. If you want to jump in on the conversation, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. bob@headonradio.com is the email address. And, of course, if you're on hold, please stay there. We'll go straight to the phones as soon as we come back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. blogspot.com. That's CUPOJOE.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Missed this so badly. I missed you guys. That's the simple fact of it. But what we were I remember back in the early days of this program in Beckley, West Virginia. I took a call one afternoon from a guy who, I'm getting ready to go to Iraq, and I'm real excited. I'm glad to be fighting for my country. I had to straighten him up a little bit. We've been talking about inadequate supply. We got all the supplies we need to do the job. All that crap's by the boards now. I don't think there's many people left in this country that don't realize we get it now. We know we've been had. We know we've been hoodooed. And the thing, in the Midwest and the Deep South, it's the dawn of realization that comes with grief, because there have been plenty of funerals in Tennessee and Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi, Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, all those places that thought that George Bush wouldn't possibly tell them anything but the straight, honest truth, because he was just like a guy who'd live next door to you and you could have a beer with. Tell you a little secret. I don't want to have a beer with the president. I really don't. Democrat or Republican? No. I don't want an ordinary guy, some dude. I don't want some dude from next door running my country. I want a really smart guy in that office. I want a certified genius running the executive branch of the United States of America. Bill Clinton was a genius. And, you know, good redneck boy, too. But a genius just the same. But, oh, you know, all the little wingnuts were so offended by that. Let's go to the phones. I'm doing it again. Peter has been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, I am so glad you're back. You know, I think I could, if Ann Coulter slipped me the tongue, I think that, you know, it just wouldn't faze me. I'm so happy you're back.
And I
really am. You know, it's going real well, too, considering you just got the remote broadcast equipment, 2 days before you left?
Yeah, right about that.
Yeah, it's not like everything isn't brand new.
Yeah, I got a lot of little dials and switches and buttons in here that I got no idea what they do.
Well,
but, you know, one button at a time, we're figuring it out.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to talk about the Brooks Brothers riot. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Yes, it
does. And I'm still trying to find out what that goon's name is. Do you
well,
have
his name is where is it here? Joel Kaplan.
Yes, Joel Kaplan.
Yes, and he's the new policy wizard that's going to fill in for Rovna. And it was him, Kaplan, that coined the phrase the Brooks Brothers riot. And what that's about is he was part of the Republicans that all went down posing as outraged Floridians and banged on the glass and screamed, stop the fraud and stop the vote and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And it's just disgusting to me. You know,
that
people,
was a taxpayer-supported riot.
Yes, it was. And these people are proud of it. According to this little article I read today, that the people that participated in it, it was more than just Bolton and this guy, Kaplan there. A lot of those folks went down there. They proudly put that on their resumes and brag about it, that they were part of that Stop the Vote team down here in Florida.
Well, you know, from time to time, Peter, BartCop.com will run it, and you can see the photograph there of all of these pasty-faced, doughy, white-dude Republicans with their fists in the air and they're screaming and their ugly, hateful faces on you just look nasty. And he's got a silhouette below it with numbers.
Yeah.
And they will
yeah.
tell you one by one who each person there is. And there's not a Floridian in the bunch.
No, they're not a Floridian in the bunch. The Floridians are perfectly willing to let their local supervisor of elections handle that. Another thing that's got me ticked off today is Fox News is amazingly Fox News has done a new report here about the Bush approval ratings, and apparently it's down to 33%. But what really kills me about this is when they're talking to the people who and asking them their reasons that they're disapproving of Bush. They're responding with things like he's doing a bad job. They disagree on the issues. It's the economy, or they say they just don't like him, or that he doesn't care about average people. And what kills me about this is where are the real words? Where are the words like fraud and fake and imposter and hypocrite and liar and treacherous and dysfunctional
well, exactly.
and overmedicated?
Yeah, when you hear things like, you know, it's the economy, or, you know, the other thing that is engendered in me is to grab hold of, you know, because, well, you remember the myth of Cassandra in ancient Greek mythology? She was given the gift.
Yes, that rings a bell. It's not one of the ones that comes immediately.
Yeah, she was given the gift of prophecy by Apollo, and she told everybody in Troy what was going to go down. But she had also been cursed by Apollo that she would be given the gift of prophecy and she would know exactly what was going to happen, but no one would believe her. And that's where you and me and progressives and liberals all are, because we hear these people now and you know, we told you, didn't we?
Well, we did tell them, and it bothers me so badly because the language that they're using to describe why they approve is it's whitewashed language that the major media uses. Now, because I don't like him, some say, because he's doing a bad job. Well, a lot of people know a coworker or a boss who's doing a bad job, but they still like him. They still support him, or they disagree on the issues. You disagree with people on a lot of issues. None of these are like fatal blow disagreements. Thank God for progressive talk radio that, you know, finally getting the words out there into the vocabulary that need to be used, the fighting words, because, you know, they've been doing it for years. We've got to start using words like liar and over-medicated and incompetent. You know, it just doesn't sit well with me.
Well, yeah, don't forget moron.
Oh, yeah. Moron, of course.
You know,
moron.
So, yeah, that bumper sticker, you know, somewhere in Texas a village is missing its idiot.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But we do have to start talking. And I'm sorry if people get offended. I got that little we had that little conversation several weeks back where, you know, it was pointed out that, you know, if you call Bush a moron, you're calling people a moron indirectly for voting for him.
Well, so where's the problem with that?
Yeah, I mean, how's that working out for you, being
exactly.
a moron?
Exactly. Well, yeah, right. So you made the connection. Good boy.
Well, you know, it's the beginning of wisdom, isn't it?
Well,
the admission of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom.
Well, it is. I don't have a lot of sympathy for the Bush voters. I remember exactly where I was when the court appointed him president, and it was like a Kennedy moment or a Martin Luther King moment. It was one of those that's burned into your mind.
Do you remember how the Bushevics stood in their hundreds, perhaps thousands, outside the vice presidential residence, screaming at Al Gore, "Get out, get out, get out"? Do you remember that, Peter?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, it was well covered by the media, I recall.
Oh yeah. Now, meanwhile, here in 2006, we have, what's the death count now?
Is it up to 2,400? Are we approaching 2,500? I've been a little bit out of the loop.
It's very near that. We have a fellow in the chat room that keeps us posted nightly on the exact figures, and I haven't seen it posted this evening, but it's very near that. And, of course, I don't think that covers the ones who were flown out on a helicopter and died on the way out. You have to die right in the sand screaming to count.
Yeah, and see, this is where I get a little bit bent with our side of it. Those people, I mean, can you imagine? They mobilized to return Peter to the genesis of your point. They mobilized people who were not Floridians, who were absolute fakes and frauds in their own right, to stand in Dade County and scream at and you know who the vote counting people are, or at least little old ladies.
Yeah, little old ladies and bug eyed men. We've all seen the pictures.
Yeah, and stood there and screamed at them and threatened violence on them.
Yeah, and these people
stood outside Al Gore's and screamed their fool heads off out there. Meanwhile, we got thousands dead already. We got tens of thousands grievously wounded, shattered minds, shattered lives, shattered bodies. We've got marriages. Oh, we're in defense of marriage. We got marriages that have been destroyed by George Bush's war. And my side and your side couldn't even find the vice presidential residence to stand outside and scream, "Get out."
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the time is coming. The tide is turning. The question is whether or not our side will be willing to seize that moment.
Another thing that I think was important that came out today is something I've been harping on for a long time. I'm glad to see it's being discussed again, and that is the fact that historians have been speaking out about George W. Bush. And there was an informal survey of 415 historians conducted by the History News Network, and better than 81% of them considered the Bush administration a complete failure and or the worst presidency in history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is how this is going to go down in history. These are, you know, historians by and large have a wait-and-see attitude, but this is they've been saying this since the first year of his presidency. You know, it's time that we as a nation, owned up to the fact that we have done something really wrong, and the world despises us for it. And there have to be some corrections. That, you know, 100 years from now, in classrooms, this particular generation is going to be laughed at. We're already
laughed at and vilified, Peter.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the first time around, maybe it was the court that did it. But the second time around, bearing in mind there were election machines that were rigged all over the place, this, that, and the other. But still, the general perception is that we elected him. And, this lopsided view of historians should give everybody pause to consider what's going on it's just amazing. There was something recently that I read. You know, there's so many scandals and so many different things going on. It's difficult to explain to people who don't have a clue, and a lot of them don't. The way the article read was that really, if there's really only one conspiracy or one failing, and that is the administration is morally bankrupt, and all these other things that are going on are merely supporting issues to prove that. And to keep it simple, maybe we better start using the phrase morally bankrupt, as opposed to just starting to cite the individual scandals. The individual scandals can be just supportive information, because really that is the honest to God's truth, completely morally bankrupt.
Yeah, you're talking about the difference between symptoms and diseases.
Well,
the disease is morally bankrupt.
Yes, thank you. That's a great way to put it. That's precisely how I feel.
The symptom is the Bush administration, for instance, that fines a television station more for Janet Jackson's nipple than it does for 13 minors' lives in Sago.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, I guess that nipple was a weapon of mass destruction.
Agnes and my kids have never been the same.
I'm still being checked by the doctor to see if there's long term damage. But so far,
are there long term implications?
Yeah, so far I'm okay. A black woman's nipple just didn't ruin my life. Oh geez, it just never ends. And Bob, I'm just so glad to have you back. You're just so not normal, and I just love you so much.
I'm so happy not being normal. But it's sort of a normality check or whatever, if you will, to be down here and compare myself against. Because you know I can go around and I hear the music and you know what this is like. I mean you live where you grew up more or less.
I kind of see it. Yes, I do.
To hear the music of the accent I grew up hearing.
Yeah, it won't take you long to slip back into it. By the way, I mean deeply.
No, it doesn't take long at all. I have to keep a close watch on things.
Well, you start hearing the music.
Yeah, you start substituting the word they for there, as in, there's a rainstorm coming.
Yeah, I love it. And how about this one? Looky over yonder.
Oh.
And instead of hand me the wrench, it's let me see that wrench.
Let me see that.
You're right. You know, and that's the
thing. And then if that doesn't produce the desired result, Peter, give me it.
Yeah. Oh God.
Give it here.
It's a whole soup
and,
that
you
nobody
know,
would get.
Yeah, we got people down here who, when they go to the grocery store, they get carried.
They get what now?
They get carried. He carried me to the grocery store.
Oh yes. Absolutely. Yeah, we all get carried. I mean, it's like the old carriages, isn't it? I guess maybe it goes, but yeah, we get carried places. We get carried by the bus and.
But in talking, you know, we're talking about very fundamentally decent people, all Americans, and it's the perpetual study of the existence of this network, Peter. How do we talk to them? How do we establish the dialogue? How do we have the conversation?
I don't know, Bob, except to say that I'm to the point where I think we need to use stronger language, and we are on programs like this. We're not afraid to say liar, but you know, nice people will typically, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt, and when you use language like I disagree with his policies, that doesn't really mean anything. It's just a little
thing.
Well, no,
that's the thing. I'm down here, and to a certain extent, it applies up there in the hills too, where the way you describe what's going on is he's damn liar.
Yes, he's damn liar. He's a damn liar, and there's several variants of that.
No, he's a damn liar, some bitch.
He is a damn liar. He's a some bitch, and yes, we could go on.
You know, three years ago, I was getting called. You shouldn't call the president a liar. You don't have appropriate respect for the office.
Oh, bite me. I got an office for you.
That's all gone now. That's all gone. I mean, you know, it's like what was said earlier. Michael Savage is out there talking about killing, 100 million Muslims now because they can't talk about, the good things or the right things that George Bush is doing. I can't imagine being Sean Hannity.
Yeah, and let's look at the language from the Pope. The Pope, what was it on Good Friday? And his speech was going on about how gay folk are of the devil or possessed or evil. I can't remember all the phraseology he used, but it's okay to use strong language. It's okay to do it, and we just have to start doing it.
They're doing it to us.
Yeah, hell yes.
I mean,
which is why they hate us, because they understand language like that.
Right, and the thing is, the day that we, and it's a thesis of mine, the day we stand up and start using the language right back, you want to call me un-American because I didn't want 2,500 Americans to be dead for nothing in Iraq?
Exactly, and that truth is slowly seeping out, and it's just, you know, it's so frustrating to people like us because we've known this for freaking years.
Well, I know, it's you know, that the great hug with who, you know.
Oh,
Herbert, you know, I wish he was Herbert Walker too, because it would have been just lovely to have a caption, you know, Herbert hugs a who.
Right. Did you notice that woman was arrested and dragged out just immediately following the part where little Georgie boy was talking about free speech? At least that's the way my mind put it together.
Yeah, that's the way it looked to me too. Hey, Peter, we got to roll on. I want to get a couple more calls.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Thank you so much. Always so good to hear from you.
You too. Bye.
Let's go to Gerard in Indiana. Hey, Gerard, thanks for holding. You're head on.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
I'm going good. You?
Well, you sound good now. You're a little breaking up a little earlier, but things seem
pretty
good now.
I think we got it fixed.
Good to have you back.
Thanks, man.
Bruce and John did a good job while you're gone, but it's good to hear your voice.
Oh, I thought so, too.
I was calling in. I just wanted to relate of the experience I had. I did something kind of dangerous the other day. It's kind of like one of those things when you're, you know, like a pre-adolescent where you look at a 10-foot ditch and you think you can jump your bike over it, you know?
Hey, watch this.
Yeah, I watched a speech by Karl Rove on C-SPAN. And I guess it just piqued my curiosity because, you know, he's the guy who has all the machinations behind the scenes. And I just wanted to see what he would be like out, you know, on a podium in front of actual people. Of course, this was kind of a stage thing. It was at some group called the Houston Forum, and it became obvious as he went through the speech that he was, you know, in front of singing to the choir. But
right.
The thing that struck me the most was that just watching his body language, and it was like watching George Bush campaign for president. I swear to God,
it was like watching the difference between Emperor Palpatine and the young Darth Vader.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but I get what you mean. It was eerie. It was like the hand gestures were the same, the cadence in the speech of the rhythms of his speech were the same. I mean, he's talking about. He was running down this whole litany of things that were supposedly Bush's accomplishments. Things like the No Child Left Behind Act, and, you know, he was saying how math and science scores for African-American fourth graders are now up 4%. And, you know, just this whole line of, you know, the usual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't believe it. It was like watching Bush's body with Karl Rove's head on it. You know, you remember the famous clip with when Clinton was in Pete, you know, and you know the gestures from Clinton, like the one where he sticks his thumb out when he's trying
the
to make
thumb out and the bite and the lip.
Yeah, and Bush's thing is kind of to stick out his hand with a, you know, the palm toward his chest when he's trying to make his point. And Rove was doing the exact same thing. And I'm thinking, man, this is like, I don't know what. I was just so freaked out about it. And it reminded me of something that I had read, and if you don't mind, I'd like to read it. It's just a couple of sentences.
Oh, go right ahead, yeah.
It's from a book called The Insanity of Empire, a book of poems against the Iraq War. It's by Robert Bly. And this is just a little prose piece at the end called...
I love Robert Bly.
It's called Intuitions and Ideas. Peter was talking about historians. It starts out with a little bit of history here. It says, people are amazed now when they read about the Lincoln-Douglas debate. The two of them would debate for 6 hours in the afternoon to large crowds, then take a break and come back for 2 or 3 hours more at night. Watching these men speak for hours, the listeners could see if the speaker's words fit the speaker's bodies. Is the language coming out of the face we see in front of us? Is that a genuine Lincoln and a genuine Douglas? But in the many plays we see on television each day, the speakers are always pretending to be someone else. So our citizens at a debate watch to see if the politicians are performing well in pretending to be someone else. Most voters have lost the ability to decide if a speaker's words do fit his or her body. That's why Bush, with the help of the Supreme Court, won the election. And I guess the point I want to make with all this is that, you know, you were talking about, you know, that little barbershop experience you were just relating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably any one of those boys sitting around that barbershop, just talking with a Bush or one of his ilk face to face, they would get a feeling in their gut when he was BSing or not.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. When Bush was campaigning.
I'll tell you what, Gerard, stand by for a minute. We've got to hit the hard break, would you please?
Okay.
Stand by. We'll come back to you out of the news.
All right.
All right. This is Head On. Agnes, get ready with the newscast there. It's great to be back, guys. It really is. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Here's today's economic report. According to the Labor Research Association, 583 pension plans have been ended in the U.S. since 2000. Despite an improvement in pension funding over the past 3 years, a recent survey of companies with big pension plans shows nearly half plan to either terminate or significantly cut them unless there's more federal funding or higher long-term interest rates to ease their funding burdens. In 2005, the average return on pension assets was 11.3%, but the pension deficit of the biggest 100 plans was $96 billion.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. The Washington State Legislature passed a bill this week that will allow home daycare providers to collectively bargain for better wages and benefits. Sarah Gustavus has more from Seattle.
The bill is expected to be signed into law, which would make Washington the second state, after Illinois, to allow child care providers to unionize. The Service Employees International Union, Local 925, is currently representing these workers. SEIU President Kim Cook says the move to organize came directly from the child care providers 2 years ago.
They actually came to us and said that they were tired of being isolated and disrespected and felt like it was time to organize.
Home daycare providers can be family, friends, or neighbors who care for a few children, or licensed daycare providers who run small businesses in their homes. SEIU found that almost half of the children who receive state-subsidized child care are in family daycares. Currently in Washington State, home daycare workers who care for these children are not even paid minimum wage. Cook says it's time to protect home child care workers.
They're incredibly underpaid. These women make, primarily women, make anywhere from $2 an hour, which is what the state pays licensed exempt providers, to around $3 or $4 an hour for those who are licensed and have businesses.
Family child care appeals to many parents, especially those who need to work evening or night shifts. Debbie Knighton operates her daycare center 24 hours a day. The new bill would also mandate that home daycare workers have a say in the regulations that govern their work. About half of the children in Knighton's care are paid for by the state, and she was worried that regulations might force her out of business.
We've lost a third of our daycare providers in the state of Washington last year. I don't want to be one of those third providers next year because regulations are so expensive to keep up with.
Knighton also says losing stable daycare providers has a dramatic impact on the children in their care.
Children really thrive in security. They have to have routine, and having someone that they know and love that cares for them every single day pulled out from underneath them is, you know, like losing a parent.
SEIU President Kim Cook says new legislation is the first step toward gaining respect for child care providers.
our bill actually doesn't really cost the state anything. It really just says that we get a seat at the table and that they have to sit down and bargain with us.
The bill passed 40-8 in the state Senate, but Cook says the organizing will continue.
Not until we win a contract will the economics and the state budget question come into play, and we're hoping that will be next year.
SEIU hopes the new legislation will build momentum to organize family daycare providers in other states. For Workers Independent News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hey, welcome back. Oh, it is good. It's, for my part, it's so good to be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Like you heard, the third hour, you know what the phone number is. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. And, any topic is fine. I guess I'm just enough of a liberal, if you will. See, I'm still getting caught up. Just enough of a liberal to think that, it's not about what I want to talk about. It's what you've heard. It's what you've read. It's about sharing. It's about putting together the totality of the symptomology, to go back to Peter's call, the symptomology of the disease, and the disease is morally, ethically bankrupt, these monsters. Let's do go back to the phone. Gerard was with us, calling in from Indiana. You still there, Gerard?
No, it wouldn't. I wouldn't be. This would be David now.
David, just a second. Let me hold on just a minute. Agnes, could you put David on hold and let us finish up with Gerard first? You there, Gerard?
Yes, sir.
Ah, okay. Had a little mix up there. That's okay.
Okay. Well, I was just saying, you know, one of the things for me personally, when actually, you know, you and Peter were talking about, you know, being wise to Bush for years. I mean, when I watched him campaign, I just got those feelings in your spine. Watching him, he would make a point in a speech and get that stupid grin on his face. And it was like talking to a used car salesman that you knew was trying to put one over on you.
Exactly.
And I just, you know, and I think people, when you talk to them, and I think I agree with Peter, I think we got to start saying stuff like, he's a damn liar. It just doesn't work anymore to do otherwise. I think the time for go along and get along is over.
And, well, and make it nice.
Mm-hmm. The other day I was reading this article by Seymour Hersh in the New Yorker, which actually I got from the Fourth Estate site. If a third of that stuff that he reports in that article is true, we're in deep manure up to our eyeballs.
Yeah, already we are.
Yeah, as far as this whole Iran thing. I mean, it's just, and I think that's one thing, you know, as well, if a third of that is true, what he's saying about some of the people in the military who are high up are beginning to see that too. You know, my thing has always been that Bush is either a total moron or the center of evil, and possibly both, and those around him. You know, one of the things, ironically enough, that Rove...
What is this, I'm the decider, foolishness?
Yeah, right. You're the decider, all right, buddy.
The guys at The Daily Show did a wonderful job of pointing out every decision he's made. And the decisions he's personally made have been disastrous.
Yeah.
Well, let's start out with Harriet Myers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw him for the idiot he was. I don't know what happened to the American people.
Yeah, the irony in this Rove speech is that he was going on about, he was talking about the quotes from past presidents that everybody remembers, like JFK, think now what you can do for your country, Roosevelt, you know, a day that will live in infamy, and all this stuff. And he said he was like an amateur historian on the White House staff, and the one he liked was Warren G. Harding, who said, this job will kill you. And Harding did die in office. But,
yes, he did.
But he went on to talk about LBJ during the Vietnam War, and apparently there's somebody who was in LBJ's press corps who gave Rove a picture of LBJ going through the daily death counts from the soldiers in Vietnam and weeping. And Rove used it in the context of a speech like as a springboard to say that Bush would not crack, you know, that somehow LBJ was weak because he wept over these deaths of these soldiers. And which is something also that Bly talks about in another book, is about people having the ability to shudder when something horrific happens,
mm-hmm.
like 13 miners dying in a mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I read this article by Seymour Hersh, the gist of it that I get is this whole neoconservative cabal that Bush has got around him, they do not have the ability to shudder. And that's why we are in the deep doo-doo.
Yeah, well, they are absent a meaningful, beating human heart, Gerard. I honestly believe that. Anything, well, it goes back to what Peter said, morally bankrupt. They have no morality left whatsoever. They are in they are in moral debt. They have negative morality. And when that happens, you can blithely send someone off to their own slaughter.
Sure.
Gerard, thanks so much. So good to hear from you.
Yeah, good talking to you, Bob.
All right, you take care now.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And rolling on to Jim back home in Beckley. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Bob, I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me okay?
I've got you fine. I've got you just fine.
Well, welcome back.
Well, and thank you.
In case somebody's going to mention it, today's Hitler's birthday.
It is that, yes.
Yeah, so could we say springtime for Hitler in Germany?
Yeah, I think you just did.
Anyway, I just called to say welcome back. I hope things are doing okay with your family and, you know.
We're,
your other two shows went fine last night, I thought. And,
I heard a little bit of your conversation. It sounded like things were going quite swimmingly.
Okay, well, listen, I'm really operating in the blind here because I can't hear you at all, so I'm going to ring off now, okay?
All right, take care, Jim. I'm terribly sorry about that.
Well, that's okay. Take care. Good night.
Bye now. Okay, we've got more bugs to work out. Our good friend John Fox ringing in from Sydney, Australia. Hey, John, you're head on. Oh, John.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Hold on, I can turn up my phone. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
That should probably be better. Anyway,
okay.
I had to ring in for a couple of things, and just as I was about to ring you, I got a package from California. I just got an absentee ballot for the California primaries. I think the laws have changed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as far as I knew, the absentee you couldn't be involved in primaries, and I'm not actually registered as a Republican or a Democrat. I am registered as an independent, and I've just been sent everything for the California primary.
In either party?
Well, I haven't had a chance to look completely through it yet, but the fact that I've been sent this, just kind of really blows me away. So I'm going to get right on this. So, you know, I didn't expect to have this kind of a voice from over here, but surprise, surprise. But originally I was calling out because I sent you a link about the fact that it's come out that Sydney Harbor's poisoned with Agent Orange.
Oh, that's, yeah, I read that. That's just charming.
And what's interesting is that we just recently found out they've never been testing the water quality of Sydney Harbor until this year.
Is this Vietnam-era Agent Orange, or is this some other screw-up?
I'm trying to find out more information, but it seems that maybe Agent Orange was still being manufactured there not too long ago. And here's the interesting thing. Anyone that came to the 2000 Olympic Games was right on top of that toxic waste site.
Well, of course, I'm sure the land went cheap.
Well, yeah, and what's kind of interesting is Union Carbide actually offered to pay for the entire cleanup, but only if it was done right. And that cleanup would have meant removing 20 meters of soil from the entire site. Go 20 meters down and remove all of that.
Well,
the Howard government said that'll take too long. They removed 2 meters and paved straight over it.
Oh, God. And so, but if you remove the 2 meters, if you'd remove the 2 meters, John, wouldn't you have been in a sort of a Ninth Ward situation there by the harbor? Wouldn't that have been below sea level?
Well, yes, it would have been, which means that it's just seeping straight into, because that's kind of the top of the harbor where the Olympic site is.
Right.
And it's just been flowing straight down, and it seems though as though most of our Sydney Harbor fishermen have been being poisoned for years, and they're finding dioxin levels 10 and 20 times the World Health Organization standards for safe levels.
Oh, my God.
And Australia has no standards on dioxin.
None?
None.
And you said that, and they just started testing the harbor waters last year?
Yeah, just this year. It's like it's been this massive... massive kind of upheaval. Now, a lot of us knew about the site. I mean, I knew about the site when it was being built, and because I've had to work on that site many times, and all of us that worked in entertainment and building stuff for football games and all that other stuff, we'd want to get off the property as soon as possible.
Well, with that, yeah. So,
I do remember once, and I told the story in the chat room, I was setting up a halftime show stage 4 or 5 years ago, and a bunch of German tourists were having the tour of the facility, you know, and they came down and saw us working and asked if we were going to play a bit of footy on the field, and we said, no, we really would rather get done and get off the toxic waste site. And all the Germans came right down the seats to come and talk to us, asking us about more information. I said, oh, this has been a toxic site for years, and the tour guide's like, nothing more to see here. And ripped them all out of there and had trouble getting them to walk away from us. And here's, you know, 6, 7, 8 of us lowly technicians going, ha, 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 ha. The truth will get out one day. But the entire Sydney fishing, seafood, blah, shut down. All these people are without jobs. Their health is in bad shape. And they say that you should not eating 150 grams of Sydney Harbor seafood once a month is too much.
And of course, when you're talking Sydney Harbor seafood, I mean, I don't know that we've got any concept of scope for it. I know I don't. I don't live close enough to the sea. But we're what, oysters, clams, shrimp, lobster.
Oh yeah, and you know you got the barramundi and all that stuff. The local seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know where they're now getting it from.
Thailand.
Probably, which I bet there's no way to know what's going on there either.
Oh, no, I'm sure not. That's part
but
of the reason.
I found it interesting, though, the fact that Union Carbide actually did offer to pay for the cleanup before. But they said they would only do it if it was done fully.
And probably only do it if there was a governmental agreement to provide some level of immunity from lawsuit.
Well, very, very possibly so. But, you know, I mean, Union Carbide, they're an awful outfit. I mean, just Bhopal, all that.
But, yeah, right. Well, they're responsible for the two greatest industrial disasters in the history of the world, Bhopal
oh,
and the
yeah,
Hawks Nest Tunnel.
Absolutely. And I think that they for once, they were actually taking some responsibility for some of their legacy, you know, and they were ready to write the check.
But only
and Howard and his little minions, you know, they wanted to do it on this cheap land, you know, and it was a way just to pave it over and have everybody forget. But no one's going to be able to forget because the toxins went straight down the harbor, and basically Sydney is surrounded by a toxic pool.
And that's such a shame because what a beautiful place.
I know, I know. And you have a lot of families here that have been, you know, family fishermen in the harbor, and they're all going, have their boats still out on the harbor, and all with signs saying, you know, we need to be tested, you know, Agent Orange in the water, you know, all kind of, you know, they were basically having a water-based protest.
Well,
and
you know, you've done
a lot of noise here, and it just
I'm very guilty, John, of romanticizing Australia. I've wanted to see it since I was a little kid. You have done a lot to disabuse me of that romance.
Well, and you know what's so sad is that I think if you get outside of New South Wales, it gets better. I just happen to think that this area, for some reason, I have no other word to use but Shysterville. It just seems like this is where...
Because Canberra's in New South Wales too, right?
Yes. Canberra is like Washington, D.C., you know, it's not a state, it's not a city, it's a thing of its own.
Well,
I have had a very, very unusual education since I've been here, because I had the same ideas as you. It seemed like it was this kind of blissful, idyllic place, but I get the impression that these people have no idea what they have here as far as this beautiful piece of land, and they couldn't care less.
And just let
it. At least that's what the government does.
Well, you know, I can't imagine it. Well, of course I can imagine it. You know, if that's Sydney Harbor, and I mentioned shrimp from Thailand. I can walk in. I can drive a mile and go into the grocery store and get some flash frozen jumbo shrimp, and it says product of Thailand on the back.
Right.
And I know what these corporations do around the world, and I know that they do it with impunity. Chilean sea bass, not so much. Because, you know, we've struggled against the corporate interest to try to have some level of environmental responsibility in this country, and it's constantly like some sort of religious pilgrim, you know, one step forward and two steps back in trying to do it, John. And they're not. They don't even try in other countries. The reasons that that so many companies were so hot and bothered to get going on NAFTA, even when the unions and Ross Perot and any number of individuals, you know, were saying, you know, this is not a good idea, they wanted to go there because they knew that they could shut down American factories and American jobs, send them to Mexico, pour their filthy effluvium into the waters of the Gulf of Mexico, or the Gulf of Campeche, or into the Pacific Ocean, and that no one would be the wiser, and it would cost them would be a little bit of bribe money. And that's a story that's been repeated from Mexico to India to Thailand. Now we find out Australia.
Well, it's also, you know, with Australia's proximity to, say, Vietnam, I am not surprised that the Union Carbide plant that was making Agent Orange was located here.
Oh, sure. It was a staging area, John. It was nothing but a staging area. You know,
and what's interesting is the media, whenever the toxicity has come up in the past, they never refer to Union Carbide. They refer to the abattoirs that used to be there.
You know, slaughterhouses, right? And such.
But, hey, mate, it's great to have you back on air. Thanks for letting us
thank you so much, John. Thank you for what you and Bruce did over the last couple of nights. I certainly did appreciate it.
Hey, man, and it was just great fun, and, you know, not being on late night, we suddenly had all these new callers and whatnot. It was really, really great, and I'll get off and let you have the last half hour for everybody else.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
Have a good night, man.
You too. Take care. I'm in the middle of reading a wonderful, wonderful book that I would recommend to everyone. this author's, the first thing I read by him was a book called The Botany of Desire. And it just, I've never been able to look at a potato the same way since. Because the author's name is Michael Pollan. And he has a new book out this year called The Omnivore's Dilemma. And some of the same stuff that John is talking about there, it's about the food supply. And it's fascinating stuff. I hope at some point to have an opportunity to try to bring Michael Pollan on the program to discuss things. But if you want to read a little bit about what corporate farming, and you know, this guy's not some, you know, wild haired granola eating, carrying around a cheese sandwich in the back pocket, hacky sack kicking deadhead or anything. He's a respectable journalist. But if you want to get a handle on what corporate food has done to America, read this book. I mean, a couple of hundred pages in, and I can't put it down. It's like you kind of already know that it was Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the lead pipe, but how he got there is the fascinating story. What he says about family farming, what he says about what has happened to states like Iowa and Kansas is alarming to say the least. We're on the way to a place where we can't feed ourselves. But there will always be food for the Lark's Vomit Canape crowd. Because there aren't many of them. It doesn't take a lot of food to feed them. And they frankly don't give a tinker's damn what happens to us, because somewhere along the way they've got this notion that they can eat their money. And if what Ben Birch said at the top of the program is true, they may very well wind up doing that. If $2 trillion in fresh paper money has been printed, we're in tough shape. But of course, we don't get to find out about things like that. No. This is especially applicable to the Republican Party, although it certainly applies to some Democrats as well. What we do is we focus on, and I'm guilty. I am guilty, guilty, guilty. I read this story today and just giggled. And you will too. You know about the flying spaghetti monster. State Board of Education member Connie Morris took exception Wednesday to a picture of a made-up creature that satirizes the state's new science standards hanging on a stucky middle school teacher's door. Fellow board member Sue Gamble told the Eagle that Morris asked for the picture to be removed. Well, State Board of Education member Connie Morris was one of the people that voted 6-4 to allow this is such sleazy journalism by Isis Fernandez of the Wichita Eagle. The board voted 6-4 to allow criticisms of evolution to be taught in Kansas school. No, it's not a criticism of evolution to say that, no, evolution didn't happen. Humans were fully formed creatures made out of the clay of the earth by the hand of God, and cave woman Eve had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin, and everything went to hell. That is not a criticism of evolution, and it's what the Kansas Board of Education voted to do. So there's this picture of the flying spaghetti monster hanging on a middle school teacher's door, and the high and mighty Connie Morris of the Kansas Board of Education comes, I want you to tear it down. Tear it down. It's offensive to my Jesus. Disgusting. And I saw it and I giggled, and you know, you would too. It was sent, I think our buddy Gene sent that to me. But we're on top of a break. We've got your Cup of Joe report coming for this evening. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. Your phone calls at 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. This is so, so nice to be back with you guys. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Okay, people, listen up. I know Bush's numbers are lousy and the polls suggest some good news for us come November, but once again I need to remind you all of how much work we have ahead of us. Even if by some miracle the Democrats manage to take control of Congress in November, can we count on them to do the right thing? That is, will they attack this administration with every legal tool at their disposal, with the end result being multiple impeachments and arrests? Or will they just solidify their own standings with the money people behind all of it? I'm banking on the latter. Actually, I'm banking on the idea that they won't even regain control of Congress to begin with. Reality check, people. We can't settle this with anything less than a death blow for the Bush administration, the Republican leadership, and the corporate backers who are corrupting both parties. We have to not only remove them from power, but take steps to keep them out for another century at least. We have to make an example of them, the political equivalent of putting their heads on pikes, so that future generations understand that there's a heavy price to pay for greed and arrogance. The only thing victory means is that we're finally able to start the real work. Getting rid of the GOP is only the first and, sad to say, the easiest step. If we want to make the world a better place, we really have to think on a global scale. Because it's not about saving Democrats or saving America. It's about saving the entire human race. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Back to the phone. Jim is with us. Maybe we can make it work this time. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
I can hear a little bit better.
Well, good.
I just want to leave you with a declaration to remember the hero's birthday, but nonetheless, I thought that was kind of awful.
Well,
now I've got
that song stuck in my head, so look what you did. You there? Ah, doggone it. Well, I do. It's springtime for Hitler and Germany. Oh, he's singing again. Oh, no. Agnes, have I messed up? Is anybody left on hold? I don't want to leave anybody. I don't want to leave anybody out. And I realize that I've messed up terribly this evening. But we will get things worked out. You could just message me, Agnes. Thank you, dear. All right, she did. Okay, we're back with Jim. Let's try again. Jim, you there?
I'm here, brother, but it's kind of difficult going. But nonetheless, you had mentioned earlier the horse vessel leaves, so I said, well, you know, maybe it is in connection with April 20th, that day of days, right?
You're exactly. And of course, it's also the anniversary of Columbine, isn't it?
No, he died on April 30th on Walpurgis Night, Witch's Night.
No, I was talking Hitler's birthday and the Columbine attacks came on the same day because they. And,
Okay.
Isn't this also the anniversary of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building?
19 April.
Oh, okay.
19 yeah. April, because I believe they wanted that to coincide with some date in American history, out of the Revolution, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, there's some interesting dialogue this week about some things. But someone mentioned earlier about the Federal Reserve borrowing $2 trillion, or not borrowing, but generating $2 trillion in cash.
Yeah, that was Ben.
Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything further. It hasn't been verified. It would be a telling fact if it turns out to be true. And you know, Ben said he didn't necessarily know whether it was or not.
Wow. Well, that's a staggering sum of money for the Chinese president to go home with, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. And when you consider all the debt that they already hold on us, we're in profound trouble.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well,
of course, maybe it would be a good idea for folks to run over to sundance.org and watch one more time that profoundly moving film strip. Funny too. Ha ha ha, America. Did you get around to seeing that?
Huh. Well,
did you get to see that, Jim?
No, I didn't. Now, what was that? Beg your pardon?
If you go to sundance.org.
No, I haven't seen that. I haven't been to that site.
You really should. It's set up like a film strip with subtitles, and you will laugh, and at the end you will be so mad you will not know what to do.
Okay, I'll have to try that. The only thing I wanted to say was... I thought it was kind of interesting that the lady who was heckling Bush in the audience today was thrown out, and a number of other things happened. I don't think it was one of his best diplomatic days. Do you?
Oh no, I heard the early translations, and you know it's always a little bit irritating trying to follow that stuff because they speak in one phrase at a time, and they break at the prepositional phrases and that kind of thing. But I heard something like, I am a leader, translation, and President Hu is a leader, translation. That means that we are both leaders. And at that point, my gorge rose, Jim, and I couldn't stand the manifest embarrassment for my poor country just having to be subjected to that.
Well, you know, back in... You know, after President Kennedy was assassinated, it was awfully hard for me to get accustomed to hearing Lyndon Baines Johnson. However, the difference between the two men is that Lyndon Johnson had some very good ideas and was responsible for a lot of wonderful legislation which has helped this country, particularly in the areas of civil rights, and at least he had noble ideas about the Great Society. I mean, he may not have been the most attractive person in the world to sit in the White House, since he would sit on with John and give interviews and show people his scar from his gallbladder operation or yank dog's ears, but at least there was some substance to the man in spite of the things that Vietnam did to him.
And there was some sense
really
that he actually cared about America.
For this country. I really do. And
well,
I salute Lyndon Baines Johnson. I didn't care for him at the time particularly. However, you know, in spite of his drawl, in spite of his, you know, imperfections, there was substance to this man. But for the current tenant of the White House, there is only shadow and no substance.
Well, exactly. And the thing with Johnson is that even as compared with Kennedy, Johnson moved with decisive action toward things like civil rights and voting equity. And he knew what it was going to do to his party, but it was the right thing to do, and he did it. You cannot make that kind of moral comparison with the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That kind of guts, that kind of courage, that kind of starch does not exist in the genetic makeup of George W. Bush.
No, I'm afraid not. Lyndon Johnson came up the hard way, and his tutor was FDR to a certain extent. He definitely was influenced by the tutelage of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I just finished a book entitled No Ordinary Time. And there was a page in there that talked about the influence that his wife had upon him. And FDR, his wife, Mrs. Roosevelt.
Right.
And how she basically was his eyes and legs and would go on inspection tours in places where he couldn't go. And it's hard to believe that we have the first lady of today and who is could occupy the same type of position that Eleanor Roosevelt did, but I guess that's just the difference between the go-to girl and Eleanor Roosevelt. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't see anybody publishing a story about Eleanor where they called her Dimebag Ellie.
No, I can't. And I guess it just shows how far the leadership in this country is gone. But, you know, the wall is beginning to crack, and I think that pretty soon there are going to be some pretty drastic changes. And I just hope for the best.
Well, I do, too.
That's all I can say, really.
Well, Jim, I hope that we can recognize that the time is now, that this is one of those if not now, when sort of situations, because by the time the full-blown rhetoric of bombing Iran starts to make its way around Congress, it will be way, way, way too late. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, because he's going to present Congress as a fait accompli. I have a distinct feeling that he is. And these personnel changes that are being made, I'm afraid to hazard say anything else other than the fact they are basically superficial.
Well, I don't know how superficial. You know, that Peter was talking and mentioned Joel Kaplan coming into Karl Rove's job. In concert with that, a report that Karl Rove's lawyer is acknowledging that Patrick Fitzgerald is still investigating Karl Rove's activities and may yet indict him.
He's bringing the prosecutor into the administration?
Well, no. The prosecutor is still in. You know, a lot of people thought that once Scooter Libby was indicted, that
would be the end of it.
That was the end of it. But according to this report, the White House. In an interview Wednesday, Karl Rove's attorney, Robert Luskin, confirmed that Rove remains a subject of Fitzgerald's investigation. And so, as a consequence, Karl may be getting a little too politically hot to be in the position that he's in. And Joel Kaplan is every bit as mean and evil as Karl Rove ever was. Oh, I fear we have we lost Jim again there, Agnes. But no, this is a significant story. Insofar as Robert Luskin, Rove's lawyer, at one point said that he did not feel that Rove would be indicted. The text from the story itself says, in a previous interview, Luskin asserted that Rove would not be indicted by Fitzgerald, but he was unwilling to make that prediction again on Wednesday. Fitzgerald is said to have introduced more evidence Wednesday alleging Rove lied to FBI investigators and the grand jury when he was questioned about how he found out that Valerie Plame Wilson worked for the CIA and whether he shared that information with the media, according to attorneys close to the case. And, of course, if you apply a little bit of skull sweat to this whole process, you understand why that is. We know now where Karl Rove learned about Valerie Plame from. He learned about Valerie Plame from the same person that everyone else did. It was a hatchet job that George Bush had done And then George Bush himself leaked the information on an active CIA agent, jeopardized not just Mrs. Wilson, but her entire cadre of clandestine contacts, all in the name of political payback. Right? Yeah. So, you know, you never know. I mean, I was a little, you know, the whole Fitzmas thing. Well, you know, but Fitzmas may yet be a possibility, and it may be the best Fitzmas ever. It may be the Fitzmas that puts all the dots in a line and shows us what a treasonous, traitorous, cowardly, un-American lout George Bush really is. The depths of his perfidy and his failure may well be eclipsed by the time the Fitzgerald investigation is over. The only problem is when that's going to be. There could be enough information come out of Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury to keep George Bush from bombing Iran. Or it may be in such a way that his only alternative is to bomb Iran and try to divert the national consciousness. Because, you know, as a people, Americans tend to love the start of wars. We're not so great about the middle and the end unless we have been directly attacked. And Iran didn't, and Iraq didn't, and Saudi Arabia did, and we've got a president who loves Saudi Arabia more than he loves America. And isn't that enough to make you near to cry? Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Bruce Birch is with us. Hey, Bruce, your head on. Hey, Bruce.
Top of the evening to you, matey.
No, top of the evening to you, or bottom, or whatever.
Well, it's kind of late where you are. Well, wait a minute. You're in Alabama. I'm trying to figure out the time zones now. I'm getting all squirrely here. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I'm only 2 hours ahead of you, not three.
Okay, so you're at 8:46. I'm at 6:46. Jim was at 9:46, and John would be at, oh hell, this is stop this now before we get
pop
a vein, you know.
Yeah, the next thing you know, we'll be trying to program a VCR, and then everything will go to hell.
There's no doubt about that. Well, you know, I just let mine
blink midnight, Bruce.
I'm sorry?
I just let my VCR blink midnight.
There you go.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I just looked up this Rove story you're talking about, and his lawyer is now saying there's a possibility he might, or he's not ruling out that he's a subject of the probe.
Exactly, and that Fitzgerald is out there presenting more information.
Okay, you know, Fitzgerald's kind of cool because he keeps us entertained, but when is he really going to drop the freaking other shoe?
I don't know, Bruce. The problem, there's a motion that, as far as I know, still hasn't been ruled on by Scooter Libby's people that says he didn't even have the authority to conduct the investigation that he's conducting. Well, you know, the condemned ate heartily and we laugh well, but the thing is, who is going to decide on that motion once it's appealed?
We do have a decider in the White House.
Yeah, but that's the wrong decider. These deciders are even more comical. This is Slappy Thomas,
mm-hmm.
and John Roberts, and Scalito, and Alito, and Scalia. You know, and the crowd that can be counted on to bootlick to George Bush.
Yeah, those guys remind me of you know that velvet painting of the dogs playing poker.
Yeah,
that's those guys. That's those guys.
You're exactly right. Oh, and by the way, it's a quarter to noon down there where John is.
Oh, it's a quarter to 12. Well, but one day we need to all be in the same time zone, shake hands, and then go our separate ways.
Never to be heard from again.
Never to be together again.
No.
No, but I just wanted to call in and tell you, Bob, that you know, I don't know, I haven't heard any of your show because I've been in the air all afternoon, but you know, and we're not on XM United Airlines yet, but we'll be. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Oh, wait, wait. You mean you couldn't like use a telephone, a cell phone in midair and get maybe like broadband
at 30,000 feet?
You can't do that.
I'm sure you can. It would, you know.
Of course we can. I mean, after all, there were all those people on like Flight 93 who were using their cell phones in midair.
Yeah, and they were using their internet, and they were also, I think they were talking to people on their wristwatch TVs as well, Bob.
And their shoe phones.
And their shoe phone. I forgot about the shoe phone.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I don't want to like, that plane was shot down, man.
Yeah, sure it was.
You know. No, but there was, I just wanted to tell you, you know, that it was a wonderful time, me and John Covering. I don't know if he's called in, but just, you know,
yeah,
thank you so much for giving us the opportunity. And I hope that your listeners, you know, that at least we treated them with a sense of fairness anyway.
Everyone has said that you guys did a wonderful job, and I certainly do appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, we're all in this thing together, and I know, you know.
Exactly.
Obviously, at some point, there will be a time when I may need some help, too, so we go back and forth. We do what we got to do. Keep carrying the message. Keep keep catapulting the propaganda, and it will all be all good.
I hope it. You know, I'm going to lean on you for the optimism because I'm not so good at the optimism part.
Well, look at the good side of this, man. I mean, 60% of the American people think that George Bush is completely cannot be trusted.
But that's
up from 57% a year ago. I mean, that's a good thing, right?
If you start singing, I believe that for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows, I'm going to terminate this conversation, okay?
Okay, well, it is, you know, I know you're getting running short on time there, man, my friend, but I just wanted to call in and touch base with you, let you know I'm on the ground
by the way,
in L.A.
Agnes just shot me a message. She said, you guys rock.
Yeah, well, you know, about the 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, I don't even remember what time it was, six, whatever time it was last night when everything sort of went to heck in a handbasket there, I was beginning to wonder.
We had one of those this evening too, and those things will happen from time to time, and then you just, you know, it's like whistling through a graveyard. You just hope you get back out into the normal space.
There you go.
Well, Bruce, have a wonderful time where you are.
Well, I plan on it, and I'm actually going to be doing, looks like I may even do a little bit of a head-on radio network meetup out here with some people. So.
Oh, that would be excellent.
Yeah, so I've got a couple telephone numbers, and we're going to see how that works out. But, you know, I'm going to be here from today all the way through to a week from Sunday. So California I'm going to come back either with a tan or speaking funny or eating strange food or something. I'm not sure yet.
Yo, dude, gnarly.
Yo, dude.
Yeah, like,
all right, man.
Just don't let anybody catch you slapping yourself with your sneaker and you're holding it. Dude, I'm so wasted. No Jeff Spicoli for you.
No, it's too grody. Too grody to the max. All right. Well, my friend, you have a wonderful evening. I'll let you get on to your closing rant, but I just want to touch base, tell you that it was super fantastic covering for you, and I'm glad to hear you back on the air, man.
Oh, thanks, man. It's great. It is so much fun to be back, and it was great to have you guys, able to save folks from the curse of the rerun.
Oh, the curse.
That noise.
Of the rerun. All right, man.
All right.
Good night.
Later. See ya. Our buddy Bruce Birch, temporarily in L.A. Okay, don't goon on me for doing the valley speak or whatever. I apologize. That was unfair of me. No mockery. Well, a little bit. So, you know, that's where we are this evening. That's what constitutes the show. And, you know, tomorrow night, God only knows what all kinds of stuff we will have worked out and ready and up and running and at speed for you. By the way, this one last thing that was shipped my way that you should know about before I toddle off into my little evening. This was
well, it was disturbing in the extreme. It comes from Free Press. You ever read that? It says that they have, the folks at Free Press, and the article is written by Bob Fetrakis. After locking out all media observers and declaring a level 10 Homeland Security alert, the Republican-dominated Warren County, Ohio, reported in the wee hours of the morning of November 3rd, 2004, and gave George W. Bush a surprising 14,000-vote boost. Two election workers told Free Press the ballots had been diverted to an unauthorized warehouse where they'd been possibly stuffed, that is, punched for Bush only. Maps were supplied to the Free Press showing the locations of the warehouse and the Board of Elections. This is at freepress.org. Warren County officials refused to allow the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism to handle the ballots, but they did allow us to photograph a few. Richard Hayes Phillips, Ph.D., has analyzed the ballots for the Free Press and concluded that there is evidence of fraud in Warren County. No. You think? Sorry, sarcasm. But if you go to freepress.org, they've got a PDF of the actual ballots. You can look at them. Nah, these things weren't monkeyed with. But at some point, maybe this turns into a smoking gun. I don't know. I joked with Bruce about, you know, being too much of an optimist. I keep waiting for the smoking gun. I keep and the gun keeps smoking, for God's sakes. And it's like those. Nah, that's not smoke. That's steam. That's steam. It's not smoke. Oh, okay. But thanks to everyone, however you joined in, and to the people whose calls I manifestly screwed up, I apologize. We're going to get it right, I promise. So join us again, Agnes in wild, wonderful West Virginia, and me in the hit recording capital of the world in Alabama. We'll have a run at it for tomorrow night, and I think we'll have a lot of fun. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. Brian Reznor announces. Our engineer is Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program and all the programs of the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives of many other fine liberal programs. He is the hardest working man in liberal talk radio. He also pretty much came pretty close to inventing this whole archiving protocol. And, of course, the show is brought to you every night by the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And every day, they help to build, to save the American dream. And, of course, our computer and technical services are provided.